my friends, and welcome to the Experience Our Industry podcast. I am Dr. Brian Greenwood, and I am super excited to be here this afternoon with Lindsay Miller. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. It's so great to see you. I saw Lindsay a couple weeks ago at our auction fundraiser. She's been a great supporter of that over the years, and is an alumni of our program, graduated in 2006, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Lindsay?
Actually, 2003 undergrad, and then 2006.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah. So 2003 undergrad. I was going to ask you that beforehand, and then I didn't. I'm sorry. 2003 nope. Undergrad, and then 2006 master's. Is that right?
Yes, except I technically didn't end up finishing the master's, but we'll just go with
it. Okay, there you go. So almost a double alumni. There we go, right? There you go. Well, we technically also just missed each other, right? Because Dr. Rue and I, Dr. Jerusha Greenwood and I got here in 2006. So we weren't lucky enough to have Lindsay in class. I don't think, were we? Did Jerusha have you the first year? No. Okay. I didn't think so. Yeah. So let me tell our listeners a little bit about what your current role. I love this title, Lindsay. It's such a fabulous title. Lindsay is the manager of strategy, policy, organizational effectiveness, and engagement for a small little family-owned company that you've probably heard of called Pacific Gas and Electric. I shouldn't add the family-owned. I don't think it's family-owned.
Yeah.
that was our old dean's favorite thing to say about Cargill, that it family-owned company, Cargill. But so Pacific Gas and Electric, everyone knows PG&E, and she's out of the Diablo Canyon plant. So we can talk a little bit about that. I'm sure that's been an interesting ride over the last several years. But let's go back in time first, Lindsay. Tell everyone where you grew up.
Sure. So I kind of grew up a little bit of everywhere. My dad is a retired United Airlines captain. And so he started his commercial airline career after being in the Air Force. And I think I was about 3 years old when he went commercial. And so he started in Atlanta, Georgia. And so we lived just outside of Atlanta in Peachtree City. And then he ended up switching airlines over to United when I was probably about nine. And we moved to just outside Denver, Colorado, into Littleton. And then right before I started high school, my parents were both native Californians, and they wanted to get back to California. Yeah. And so eighth grade year, we moved to northern San Diego County. And then that's where up going to high school. And yeah, so we moved quite a bit, but I loved it. It was a lot of fun.
Nice. Well, you know, that builds resilience in kids to move a little bit, right? So that's great. But then, I imagine you get the cred wherever you go. Once you say, dad's a pilot, right? They're like, Oh, okay.
Yes. It's fun.
I love that. And you know, I wasn't sure whether I was detecting any twang or not. Did you retain a little bit of Southern twang from your Georgia days or what?
Funny, I had a very heavy accent as a child, and my parents ended up sending me to speech therapy to try to get it a little bit lessened. But I think when I say Atlanta, Georgia, it definitely comes back. But I also work with two Southerners. And so whenever they get started, I feel like it's like definitely somewhere still inside of me.
100%. And you know, I think there is a bit of modeling, like you said, when you work with people. You know, I was waiting tables in my hometown in North Carolina. I guess I was maybe 22 at the time, Lindsay, and I was waiting on two gentlemen from New Jersey. And they were like, "Oh wow, where are you from, man?" And I was like, here. I born and raised here in North Carolina. And they were like, really? They're like, you have a New Jersey accent. And I was like, what? Really? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, I just realized I must have been modeling, right? Like, I think that's a, I really do think that's a thing, you know, because I had been gone from my hometown for a pretty long time once. And we went back, me and my best friend went back for a party, and he pulled me aside at one point during the night and was like, you've got to stop making fun of all these guys. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, you're putting on our old accent just like these guys. And I was like, I'm not putting on my old accent. I'm hanging out with my old friends. So of course it sounds that way. The whole time he thought I was making fun of our like good buddies from high school. I'm like, dude, no way. It's wild. So tell me about, let's go one by one. So what's your memory? What's a memory that sticks out from Atlanta, from your Georgia days?
Oh gosh. I still love, all Coke products. Especially growing up in the 80s, Coca-Cola was like the thing. I just now I drink Diet Coke, but back then it was Coca-Cola, and everything was Coca-Cola. I had Coca-Cola pajamas, Coca-Cola sleeping bag, Coca-Cola backpack. So, you know, to see that Coca-Cola logo and not think of Atlanta just because it was so prominent there.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. It's amazing little things like that stick out, right? What about Colorado? Did you become a ski kid? Did you get into skiing?
Yeah, my dad was a pretty avid skier, and so I don't know if my sister went as much as I did, but he had us skiing like all the different resorts, and so. Yep. Time we had these. I remember we had these ski jackets, and you could get the little lapel pins from the resorts, and so that was like the big thing, was to ski every, so that you had all of them, and it was kind of, you know, it was how you got your cred, I guess.
yes, it's almost like your flair. What are those restaurants where they have them like with their flair or whatever? I do remember that from the day back in the day with skiing. That is awesome. And then what about San Diego? Did you get into surfing or anything like that?
No. And, you know, honestly, I didn't end up, I mean, I went to high school there, but only lived there, I think, the shortest amount of time.
Right.
Trying to think it was a very small town. And I think I loved that part of it, was that it just, you kind of knew everybody knew each other. And it was a very safe place to grow up, a lot like the Central Coast.
Awesome. Now, you mentioned a sister, so I would be remiss not to ask you, just one sister, or do you have any other brothers and sisters?
Just one sister. She's younger than me by 3 years. She actually went to Cal Poly right behind me. I actually met her husband, my brother-in-law. He's a former recce. So they met at Cal Poly, the very, very tail end of college, and then ended up getting married. But it's kind of nice. Matt and my brother-in-law and I were friends first. And so when they got together, it was just kind of nice. He was always a good friend of mine through the program. And so now he's my brother-in-law.
That is so cool. Wow. That's a good story. Thanks for sharing that. I'm glad I didn't miss that one. I've done this little glory days segment, Lindsay, where you get to brag a little bit about like what your greatest accomplishment before you came to Cal Poly. So it's like, you know, the old glory days song. You remember it. Most of the people I talk to might not remember glory days. You probably remember glory days, you know? Sorry, terrible rendition, but, what you got? What you got for us?
Oh, gosh. You know, what came to mind is actually just a funny story. So my parents were really big into tennis. They've now kind of switched to pickleball. But they always played up the club. And So they had gotten my sister and I into it. And my dad just really, you know, he's an athletic guy. And my sister and I are both not very athletic. And we definitely enjoyed tennis more for the social aspect. Like, neither one of us have a competitive bone in our bodies.
Yeah.
And my mom really into tennis, but also was definitely very into it for the social aspect. And we used to laugh that we're all in it for the clothes. But senior year of high school, I was the captain of the team, and we're at the senior banquet, and the coach is handing out all these awards for, you know, best volley, best, you know, overhead, most improved, you know, all these different things. And I get best dressed.
Nice.
Mom was very proud. I think my dad was just shaking his head. But yeah.
That is too funny. I love that. That's so like,
I'm very proud of it. The best dressed.
You've got the plaque still to this day, huh?
Yes.
I love it. That is so awesome. Yeah. And that's so funny to hear you say about the competitive thing, because, you know, I'm coaching my youngest, Max, who's, about to turn 14. And I gave a pep talk to his, like, Babe Ruth, I'm the head coach of the Babe Ruth team. And, you know, I grew up in North Carolina. I mean, sports is just, it's huge, you know, and I mean, I tell people it's kind of funny because, you know, we live here in affluent San Luis Obispo County, and my son has never played a game with a scoreboard or an announcer or anything like that. Never played a baseball game with that, right? And I never played one without any of that, right? Like, it was like scoreboard, concession stand, announcers. It was like everything, like in a 10,000, you know, rural North Carolina, 10,000 people, you know? And so I'm like, man, we got to step up our game here in San Luis Obispo County. But anyway, I decided, so speaking to the competitive thing, I decided to give them a pep talk. And because, you know, we were playing a five cities team. And I said, so tell me, like, what's the stereotype? Is that five cities is better than you guys in baseball, right? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, how does that make you feel? And I was expecting them to be like a chip on our shoulder, mad. We want to get them, you know? And they were like, scared. I was like, that's not what I was looking for. I realized the pep talk was not going to go very well after that, Lindsay. So let's talk about your pathway to Cal Poly, right? So obviously you're down in San Diego County, and of course we have plenty of alums from San Diego, but it's closer to the other Cal Poly, Cal Poly Pomona. So tell us about how you heard about Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. What's your story?
Yeah. So, you know, my dad did the whole college tour thing with me. He was always very much like, education does not end at high school. You will go to school, go to college. And so we did a bunch of tours. You know, ironically, we didn't look at Cal Poly. And I don't remember why, because we went, you know, even north of Cal Poly. But we had gone out to U of A and University of Arizona, and we got there the day after they had won like some Pac-10 basketball tournament kind of thing. And I just fell in love with the school. It was the pride that the students had, and the excitement on campus that day was so fun. Yeah. So I actually did early decision to U of A, and it was funny because we had two really good families that we were friends with. And they each had a son that was a year older than me. And one son ended up going to U of A and one went to Cal Poly. And, you know, at 18, the way that you make decisions is very different than you make them now. But son that had gone to U of A ended up hating it. And he came home early and he had nothing but bad things to say about the school. And, you know, Derek and I could not have been more different of people. But it scared me to death. And I went to my dad and I said, I think I've made the wrong decision. So we looked at the schools that I had gotten into, and, you know, I had never visited Cal Poly and Casey, that was the family friend's son that had gone, just loved Cal Poly. He had nothing but great things to say about it and how much he was enjoying it. And so my dad basically on a whim was like, we're going to fly up. We're going to look at the school. I mean, we did it all in one day and campus tour. And I just remember standing on campus and being like, this is where I want to be. And so luckily I was able to switch and still accept Cal Poly because I had done early decision UVA. So luckily there was time, but so it was kind of a whirlwind change around, but it was great. And I never regretted that decision at all. So definitely the right one for me.
I love that story. That is so great. And what a benefit to have a pilot dad. Like, we're just going to fly up to San Luis Obispo. And what a different airport now. That back then, that was...
I know. About it, because I'm like, we even had to, I remember having to arrange for a taxi because this is, you know, all way before Uber, and yeah, we just out in one day, but I knew I loved it up here. That's, I knew they were special. Yeah.
That is awesome. Well, let's talk about your experience here at Cal Poly. You know, we obviously take great pride in the Learn By Doing philosophy, and you know, with most of my guests, I'm able to say, I know how involved you were, but I wasn't here. So I don't know, Lindsay. So I get to hear you tell me. So tell us, first of all, what is like your greatest enduring memory where you're like, oh, wow, like, I'll never forget this. And then we'll get into the professional development aspect of Learn By Doing.
Sure. You know, I think big picture, the thing, when I first started at Cal Poly, I was actually business, and it was through some girls that lived on my floor in the dorms that I figured out, you know, kind of what rec was, and ended up in Dr. Hendricks' office, you know, begging to get in the program. But yeah, I think what's so different to that about the program to me compared to like business was, you know, the faculty and the fact that they cared so much for the students and the, you know, investment that they put into making sure that the students, you know, got what they needed out of the degree in order to make it in the real world. But, you know, if I think about a specific thing that I have taken away that I will never forget, it actually, Kirk Sturm, who I don't know, does he still teach in the department at all?
He does. He's Dr. Kirk Sturm now. You know, he got his PhD. Oh. And he's working on his like third master's right now, too.
Come again at some point. I don't know if he still does this, but when he taught the class, because he was the superintendent of parks, including Horse Castle, when I took his class. But he did this thing at the beginning of every class where you had to go around and say something you appreciated. And that has always stuck with me for life. And it's funny because I just was meeting with another former recce and about some work stuff. And we were both sharing how we have this very, you know, very strong memory of him doing this and how it just shifted your whole energy for the day. And it's something that I've always taken with me into work, and it's stuff that I do with my team and in meetings, but just making sure it's such a way to level set and make sure that it's going to be a positive experience. And I have always loved that.
I absolutely love you sharing that. And I, you know, I've observed Dr. Sturm's classes a few times over the years, and I'm just I've just always been struck by that too. And he always opening like that and taking the time to go around, and it's like you said, I love that level set. It is such a level set, and it is so special. And it's like one of those type things where, and when I interviewed Sturm, you know, it's one of the things I was like, tell me what's the secret sauce, like why does every student that's ever come through just love you to death, you know? And I think that's one of the many reasons why, is that just appreciation for how genuine he is as a person. And yeah, one of my earliest memories, I was here like a week or 2 weeks, and got Drush and I were only here like 2 weeks, and we got a private tour of Hearst Castle with Sturm, and it was unbelievable. It was like one of the most fun 2 hours of my life. Like, walking around listening to him tell us like all the secrets of the place, you know. It was pretty
He had told everybody in the class that if they could get, I think it was a B or better, it might have been an A, but he would let us swim in the pool. And that drove people to work so hard. And he did. He delivered on it. We swam in that pool.
That is awesome. Yeah, you know, he was responsible. I guess no one swam in the pool for like 20 years. It was like he was the one who got the pool back opened up because he said he made the case, I guess, to the Hearst family that like Mr. Hearst loved having people up here swimming in the pool. Like people need to swim in this pool. And so he got it open back up, I guess. Yeah, that's awesome. Wow. What a fun story. Well, let's talk about Learn by Doing and how you embraced that during your time here at Cal Poly. When you look back, is there something, whether it's a job or whether a project or whatever it might be, that really stands out where you think to yourself, wow, this really helped me, propelled me into the working world?
Yeah, I would say, I don't know, is it still called a Rec 330, the experience?
Yeah. Well, it's RPTA 330 is our field experiences. Yeah.
So I did that a couple times. And what I loved about it is it gave me, and I remember that it was the faculty that would help us like identify the opportunities. But one of them I had was to volunteer with CASA to do event planning for them for their big fundraiser every year. And at the time it was this event called Kiss the Pig. And basically, I think if I remember right, there were like different community members that had agreed to do this. And then based on fundraising, like whoever raised the least amount of funds had to kiss a pig.
I thought you were going to tell me it was like I'm a North Carolina guy. So I thought you were going to tell me it was like a pig picking type thing. I was like, a pig picking? Oh, boy. it really was a pig kissing.
Yeah. And then another one, I know, you know, Mardi Gras not a thing anymore, but when I was there, it was still, you know, happening. And so I got to volunteer to coordinate some of the Mardi Gras events. And I just love that because it was like you could get classroom experience, but then or credit experience. And then, you know, you were actually doing real things in our community. And so I definitely took full advantage of that. And you know, now the dinner that we just attended, the fundraiser, it's such a bigger event than it had been back then. But I got to help with those and golf tournaments. And so I loved all the Learn by Doing, you know, anything. I loved the classroom, but I also loved all the stuff outside the classroom.
Yeah, you know, we have an advantage as an applied field, you know. It's like I tell people, I'm like, you know, well, you know, our field is really is, you know, it's not like we're economics or English or philosophy or whatever, right? It is an applied field. And so we would be remiss if we didn't have you engaging and Learn by Doing. So I love that. That's so great to hear that you had that type of experience. So let's talk about your internship and your pathway into a career. What tell us about what you did, how you found out about it, how you got it, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I've got kind of a crazy story. So when I was at Cal Poly, you know, in rec, Dr. Hendricks was actually the one that got me started going to that. I think it's called the California Tourism Industry Association Conference, CalTIA, every year. And I ended up meeting this gentleman who just kind of took me under his wing and was trying to help me kind of figure out. He worked for National Geographic. And so he knew that I was from Southern California and really interested in getting back to Southern California. And so when I was looking for an internship, he connected me to this company called Myriad, I believe. It's been so many years now.
Yeah.
But they basically acted as like a marketing tourism agency for other countries inside the US. So like anytime you saw an ad for like Rio de Janeiro or Fiji and like in National Geographic, that would be them. They were the agency behind all of that and working on trying to get, you know, US citizens to go travel to these other countries. So I luckily was able to interview with them, got the internship, and they had basically said that if the internship went well, it would transfer, you know, into a full-time job. And I was just on cloud nine. It was perfect. Everything was falling into place. And so that I had kind of hooked that about 3 months before I was going to start it. And because I still was finishing my winter quarter, I was going to do the internship spring quarter. And about a week before I was supposed to start, I mean, I was going to move to LA, everything. I get a call from the owner of the company, and President Bush had just declared war on Iraq. And they said, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with all the accounts, everything, you know, travel to other countries was kind of being restricted. And so basically the internship just completely fell apart. And so I was pretty devastated.
But
of all things, it ended up working out really well. I had worked for the San Luis Chamber of Commerce my senior year of college, and had reached out to my old boss and about something else, and ended up telling her what happened. And the marketing director for the SLO Chamber was about to go out on maternity leave. And so later that day, I got a call from the CEO of the chamber, and he said, "Hey, I heard you need this internship credit." He goes, "The internship, you know, timeframe really kind of matches up with the pregnancy leave or maternity leave." And so he said, "If you're up for it." And so luckily enough, it all worked out perfect. And I ended up full time at the chamber after that, and ended up spending 11 years working for the chamber. So it ended up being a great thing, but the road to getting to it was a little rough.
Was a little rocky. Oh wow. Okay. So wow, what a story. So tell us, you say 11 years for the chamber, is that right? After that. So did your was it a type thing where you felt like you did so well that they created a position for you? Was it that type of situation?
Yeah, it wasn't quite a straight line, but it worked out. And okay. I ended up interning a little longer than I expected, but it worked out. And then I actually ended up getting hired on full time in a different position. But then after a couple of years, I ended up full time in the marketing position, which was what I absolutely loved. So I ran the visitor center for the first 2 years, and then was in marketing, I want to say, for probably eight of it. So it worked out well.
I love it. And such a partner with the department over the years. And that's a good way to stay connected. Like I remember when, you know, when we first got here and during that time period, you know, people would say, "Oh, just go see Lindsay at the chamber," you know? And, so tell us about, obviously a long time period. Not many people nowadays stay with any organization for 10 plus years. So what's your biggest takeaway? Tell us and tell for our listeners who, I mean, I think most people know what a chamber of commerce is, but I think you would be surprised with some of the younger students, you know, the ones that are maybe prospective students who are listening or current students. I don't think they necessarily know fully what a chamber, they've obviously heard Chamber of Commerce, but they don't necessarily know exactly what a chamber does. So tell us what your role was and all of that. What kept you there, all of that?
Yeah. And to be honest, I didn't know what a Chamber of Commerce was when I first started. But I had quickly found out because my college roommate's dad was the Chamber of Commerce CEO down in San Diego. And so learning what he did was kind of what sparked my interest in the chamber world. But, you know, a chamber is essentially an organization of businesses in the local area that come together. They're usually their main pillars are to promote tourism, advocate in local government, to work on economic development for the community. And that was, you know, what really got me into it was the tourism piece, but I really loved, and learned to love even more, you know, the economic development piece, really kind of what makes a community thrive and, how, you know, businesses working together are actually better for the economy than, you know, working against each other. So, yeah. Yeah, I loved it. I had 11 years there. I, you know, of course, so started working in the visitor center that led to the internship, and then ran the visitor center for a few years. That's when I had, I think at one point I had all rec students working for me, yeah, but always series of folks coming in and out, which was just great. And then in the marketing role, my biggest focus was we were the contracted agency to do public relations for the city of SLO. And so I handled all the travel writers, any media, you know, anything related to really promoting the city from a tourism end, and just absolutely, absolutely loved the job. It was really fun and definitely, you know, I still love to promote SLO.
Yeah, of course. Now, does the chamber work hand in hand with Visit SLOCAL? Do the DMOs work usually hand in hand with the chambers?
Yes. And you know, when I was there, which I've been gone for, I think, 11 years now, back then it was kind of Visit SLOCAL was more the county regional branding, and we are the city branding. So not to say that, you know, we would draw these strict lines. Of course, a lot of what I promoted was First Castle and the beaches and, you know, things outside of the city limits. But for the most part, we handled everything that was just within the city.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So let's talk about that transition. I mean, I guess the number is 11, huh? So 11 and 11, right? Is that right? 11 years now with PG&E. So yeah. What you've said several times that you just absolutely loved working for the chamber. So what pulled you away? What made you pull the switch and go to PG&E? Is there a story behind that?
Yeah, you know, I think kind of what you said earlier, most people don't stay in a career for 11 years, especially their first one. And I think it had kind of been a series of things. My boss for the majority of the time was Dave Garth, who was the CEO of the chamber. And I knew I wanted to stay there through the time that he retired. And when the new CEO came on, you know, I was there to help transition her into the new position. But I just was kind of starting to itch to be ready to do something new. And there was a public relations job that came up at PG&E. And luckily, you know, being at the chamber, you're so connected to the business community. And so I knew a lot of the folks locally at PG&E. And so they basically told me about the job, told me I'd be perfect for it. And so I threw my name in the hat and, you know, applied, and it just kind of all came together. And so, you know, I mean, I love the chamber. I've absolutely nothing, you know, negative to say about it. It was just definitely kind of 11 years is a long time.
Yeah. So it was time. So, let's talk about your current role. And, you know, I think we would be remiss to not mention that I'm sure there's been the last few years, at least, there's probably been an interesting ride with Diablo Canyon closing and then reopening and all of that. So tell us in a nutshell, you know, I said your title earlier, so I'll repeat it for everyone, because I really do love it. It's an amazing title. Manager of Strategy, Policy, Organizational Effectiveness, and Engagement. So tell us in a nutshell, what do you do? What do you do, Lindsay?
Sure. So, yeah, as you mentioned, so I started in 2013, and in 2016, we made the announcement that we were going to close Diablo Canyon. And so a lot of my early focus at PG&E the first few years was really on public relations. And I actually, for my first 2 years, covered from where we start our service territory in Santa Barbara, which is like at the Goleta Pass, all the way through to Santa Cruz. And so I was doing public relations and grants and working really closely with the communications team. And then I ended up kind of evolving into federal affairs because the plant is federally regulated. And so being in this area, there became a lot of interest around Diablo, what was going to happen with whether we were going to relicense or whether we close. And so in 2016, we made that announcement. And my job really shifted to being part of that team that was, you know, communicating to the community and the employees and everybody about why this decision was made. You know, the state modeling just really showed that they weren't going to need Diablo's 9% of California's power, and we're baseload power, meaning, you know, we operate 100% of the time. We don't ebb and flow like wind and solar and other producers do. And so, yeah, so my job kind of shifted to, we were a full-time kind of response team to explaining how this had all come to be. And then I did that for a couple of years. And then my job really shifted to, again, because I had been at the chamber and had a strong, you know, background in economic development. I started on this project that we have 1,300 employees out there, and we knew about half of them were going to be retiring when the plant closed in 2025. So this was probably 2019 that I started working on this project, that how are we going to ensure that the other 750 employees, or however many, you know, needed secondary jobs, how are we going to make sure that they had employment? You know, we didn't want to just, you know, wish them well and pay them severance. We wanted to make sure that they had careers that they wanted them. And so for about 3 years, that was the big focus of my job, was kind of creating a program that helped figure out, you know, how we would transition employees. And then in 2022, we found out that the governor had kind of reversed course and was very interested in keeping Diablo open. They, you know, with the change in having so many EVs come online, and they weren't seeing the energy reductions that they had expected, and, you know, supply in other areas, lots to it. But so yeah, we reversed course in the middle of 2022. And since then, my focus has really been on the employees. We had to hire 300 folks. You know, we had to ensure that the ones we had wanted to stay. And then we ended up with this big grant from the Department of Energy. So there's just been more than enough to do.
I bet. And that arc kind of explains, I would imagine, what's kept you pretty interested in this position, right? Oh. You've had like different messaging every couple of years, right? Different types of work. And I imagine that's kept you on your toes. Is that right?
It has. And, you know, and that's the thing. There's never a dull moment. There's always a lot to do. Right. I'm side of the house that we're running the business. You know, everybody else is kind of running the plant, making sure we're making power, and we're making sure that, you know, we are running the type of business that we need to run. And yeah, never a dull moment.
That's awesome. Now tell me, you told me early on when we first hopped on that you're 4'10", right? So I want to ask you a little bit about work-life balance and what that's like. And if you like that 4-10, I know that's a model that a lot of people or that some organizations have gone to allow some added flexibility. Do you drive into Diablo the other all 4 days, or how does that situation work?
Yeah, so we are full-time on site. As I mentioned, we have 1,300 employees, and I'd say I think almost all of them, you know, a bunch of us have gone home during COVID, but I think all of us are pretty much back now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I really enjoy it. I don't have kids, so I know folks that have families, it makes for very long days. I mean, you know, I'm in South San Luis, and, you know, the plant's in Avila. And so I have probably one of the closest commutes, and it still takes me about 40 minutes between leaving my house, parking, and getting into the site, because you have to go through security every day. So it's a long commute, and then it's a long day, and then commuting on the back end. And so I think that's probably why they went to a 4-10 schedule, was because it's, you know, there's nowhere really close to live to the plant. I mean, even once you get to Avila, it's a 10-minute drive up the access road. But I love it. It makes, you know, kind of having that longer weekend gives you more time to unwind, gives you more time to get things done on a Friday. Because the other thing is, with being so remote, you can't run to like CVS in the middle of the day. Right. You're not lunch, like, so having that, you know, day during the week that you can get stuff accomplished, doctor's appointments, things like that, it's very nice to have.
Yeah, that makes sense. I had never really thought about it like that. I was going to ask you what it's like getting to work up there, because I've heard people say it's like Big Sur there on the on side. It's just gorgeous up there. But yeah, is
Yeah.
that true?
Have 14 miles of coastline, so the drive-in is about halfway, so it's 7 miles, and you're just, it's all untouched. Nothing's on the property other than the power plant in the middle, and so there's cattle grazing and wildlife, and yeah, it's just an incredible part of California that's just so nicely undeveloped.
Love it, love it. So, what do you do on those 3 days? What's your jam? What do you like to get into here in San Luis Obispo County? What's your favorite thing to do to relax and unwind?
Oh gosh. Well, I am definitely a big fan of the wine country. So, I probably have a few too many wine memberships, and but I do. Friday's usually my get stuff done day around the house, because also most of my friends are working. But I take full advantage of this community. I love hiking. I love the green belt that surrounds the city. I love to just pop around, and I have a aunt that lives in Aurora Grande, so spending time with her, yeah, just great friends.
Nice, that's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about you've had to wear several hats, right? The public relations, the employee experiences, you've gotten your tourism marketing background. Tell me about whether or not you feel that this whole path that we've taken, right, with experiences, right, this co-creation of experiences with experience design and that sort of, are you seeing that? Do you see that in your day-to-day?
Oh gosh, yes. And so I'm getting my MBA at Cal Poly right now, and loving that. I kind of wish I had done it a little, because I'm early 40s now. I wish I had probably done it in my 30s, but loving it. And I had kind of forgotten about the fundamentals of design thinking, because I remembered learning that in undergrad. But we just took a class last year in design thinking for the MBA, and I forgot how it really is just such an amazing kind of concept or process, that you can take something that's so big and almost seems like that you can't solve it, and then you can piece it down into these steps that, really help you figure out how to accomplish something. And it's funny, because if I reached over here right now, I would show you. I still, to this day, the professor gave us this like trifold brochure with the steps of design thinking, and it sits on my desk, because I can't even tell you how often I reference that when I have something so big that I don't even know where to start by solving it. I just go back to those basics of like, where do you start? What do you identify? So I'm a big fan of design thinking.
I love that. I love that. And I did not know that you're getting your master's. That is really awesome. Getting your MBA. That is
Yeah.
really cool. And I'm very excited to hear that. And I think you're a testament that you're never too old. You mentioned that you're in your 40s and you wish you had done it in your 30s. But to anybody out there listening, it's never too late. We mentioned Dr. Sturm. He's got like a he has a JD, a PhD, and I think he's working. I don't know if it's his second or third master's that he's working on in analytics. He's just so it's awesome. It's awesome that you're doing that. I want to give you a chance to give some advice to if you could try time travel back in time to junior year, what advice would you give to your junior year self, Lindsay?
Oh gosh. Probably two things. I loved all of my rec classes. I got a ton out of them, but I would highly recommend two classes outside of rec. And one is taking a communications course. I think that the reality of life and business is that everything is rooted in communications. And I had taken an elective course that was called Business Communications, and it kind of taught you how to take a professional approach to learning how to write emails and send memos and communicate with the folks. They set it up like you are a mock business in the class. And I got so much out of that. I think, you know, professional communications is so different than how you communicate with your friends and family. And so learning how to do that, especially as you're coming out of college, is really critical. And then I just took a class in my MBA that I think, you know, you can take in undergrad too. And it was all about, I can't remember the title of it, but it's something to do with law and not like criminal law. It's about like the business law. And, you know, it's so funny. Yeah. And that's the thing is like, I mean, even at my age and with the experience now I have in work, like the professor taught us some fundamental things about understanding contracts, terms and conditions, you know, the civil side of litigation, all of that. And I learned so much that, you know, I wish I had known 10, 15, 20 years ago.
It's right.
Is that, you know, any working professional is going to end up needing those skills. And so I would highly recommend those.
Love that. Love that. And that communications piece, in particular, I wish I was a psychology major. And so, and then I got my master's in sport management, recreation, and PhD also. So now, yeah, I never had a business communications course. And I remember my first job, like, my supervisor would hear me like clicking on the, really hard, you know, typing with emotion. And he would say, "Don't send that." I wasn't very good at professional communication when I first started. It would have been nice to have that. Well, Lindsay, I can't thank you enough. I really appreciate you taking the time. And thank you so much from all the faculty. We really appreciate the support and the engagement over the years that you've had and giving back to the department. Just means the world to us and really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate you inviting me to do this. I had such a great experience in REC, and it really has set my whole life up. So I'm forever grateful.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Bye.